If you have a Bible, we're going to be looking together at a book called Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is found in the Old Testament. If you find the Psalms and just travel forward by a few pages, you get to the Proverbs, and then you come to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, we began thinking about last week, as a number of phrases and refrains that go through the book. One of them is that this man who is the preacher says, actually, everywhere I look, what I keep bumping into is meaninglessness. I'm bumping into it wherever I go and struggling and fighting to find how do I make sense of life. Last week we began by just looking at the first two chapters, and it was really a story about how he'd looked over all the world, and wherever he went, whether it was in romance, whether it was at work, whether it was in wisdom itself, whether it was in knowledge, everywhere he bumped he kept in saying, I can't make sense of life. And we heard the echo of Jesus' words that said, what good will it be if you gain the whole world, if actually you do gain it all, but actually you lose your soul in the midst of this. We reflected on what it meant for us. Well, we're going to read on. And the thing about the book of Ecclesiastes is that I think that probably lots of us have never really read the whole thing through up till relatively recently. And we know bits of it. Well, this is one of the bits that you know probably. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. And some of you will now begin to hum the song, if you're old enough. There's a time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain, a time to search, and a time to give up, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to mend, a time to be silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. What does the worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden that God has laid on men. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they can't fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know there's nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything that God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken away from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been. What will be has been before. And God will call the past to account. I'm going to stop there. Thinking with this preacher as he looks around the world, and he's really just looking at what time is it? What's happening around us? How do we make sense of the change? And how do you make sense of the different seasons of your life? How do you make sense of all the different stuff that comes? And what he does in the first eight verses is this poetic way of saying, let me tell you about what life's like over a period. And there's times of hope, and there's times of birth, and there's times of planting, and there's times of peace, and there are times of gladness, and there is times of dancing, there's times of laughter. But then there's the opposite. There's times when people die. There's times when things feel like they're being uprooted. There's times when you feel like you're losing things. There's times when you mourn, and it feels like just darkness. There's times when you lose, and you lose friends, and you lose things. There's a time where things are taken away from you. There's a time when it's a time of silence and there's times of war and feeling embattled. One of the things I'm increasingly, you know, increasingly loving about this book is that it will not let you get away with pious platitudes. It won't say, smile and everything will be fine. It doesn't let you do the easy answer. And I think the reason, one of the reasons it's in the Bible is precisely because of that. Because actually, this God who created us wants us to live the whole of life before him. And the whole of life sometimes is actually quite difficult. You see, it's easy if you've got an idea of following Jesus and living for God, if God's only going to be there for you, if God's only, your expectation is that God will only do the good stuff. But you only need to live a little while to go, actually, it's not always like that. Even when we pray for little children in a service like this. We pray heartfelt prayers, but actually we go, do you know what? That's not right, is it? That's not right. And the preacher comes along and says, you've got to make sense of what's going on around you. You've got to know what time it is for you. You've got to know what you should be doing right now. He says in verse 10, he said, I've seen the burden that God has laid on men. What is this burden? Well, the burden is two things. He's made everything beautiful in its time. And the second thing is, he set eternity in the hearts of men. So how come these two things become a burden? Well, let's look at the positive thing first. He said he's made everything beautiful in its time. It's like the preacher is looking around and going, you look at the seasons of life. And actually, there's beauty there. Everything in its own space and its own time, there is beauty. The life cycle of the tree. It's not just, am I the only person in the room who is really pleased that the nights are getting lighter? Who actually thinks that the depression that he lives with in the winter is now beginning to lift? But this idea that actually there's beauty, but not this year so much, but do you remember last year when the snow came? Exactly. When it came, there was a beauty. One of the memories I will carry almost, I don't know whether forever, but certainly until I forget it, which at the rate I'm going might be with lunchtime, was being called, I was in London, being called by Maggie saying, Neil, you need to come home because actually the snow's coming down so very heavily that everything's starting to stop. And I got a train to Piccadilly. And at about 6 o'clock in the evening, that was it. No other transport, nothing else. And walking from Manchester through the deserted streets and along the Broad Street with no traffic, and it was just like the silence where the snow had dampened every noise, and it felt like I was the last man on earth. There's a heroic side to me that I wish were there sometimes. And everything. Now, of course, it was only a few more days and we were all going, oh, this blooming snow. But actually, the beauty that comes when it feels like the world is being covered and there's no leaf on trees. And it's not easy, but actually there's a beauty there if you search for it. As there was on Thursday when we were sort of 16 degrees. And suddenly it felt like, wow, this is what warmth felt like. He said he's made everything beautiful in its time. There's a beauty about life. And again, I just want to make it the obvious thing. The preacher's not saying it's pie in the sky when you die. It's actually about finding the beauty in the world around. He's made everything beautiful in its own time. And then he said, the other thing I've seen, the other burden, though, is he set eternity in the hearts of men. It's like he points to us and he says, do you know what God's done? because, and some people think, and I think they're right, some people think that what the writer of Ecclesiastes is doing is like a riff on the creation account in Genesis 1 through 3. It's like they take the story of how things came about, and then the preacher is going around that all the time. That's why work is such a big deal for the preacher in the book of Ecclesiastes, because that's what you're created to do. But he looks at this and he says, what God has done, because we've been created in the image of God, because we've been created for more than this, he's set eternity in our hearts. There's something about our understanding of our own life that goes, it can't just be this. And we fight about what does it mean? Maybe it's the thing that sets us apart from animals. We need meaning. Well, why do we need meaning? Because he set eternity in our hearts. None of you. I've got two cats. You're welcome to them. This is a serious point. I'm going to get Frank to make a film and advertise my cats. My cats are really quite happy just eating, drinking, sleeping, full stop. It's no way to live, Mary. None of us can live like that. Of course, you can keep going like that. Eat, drink, sleep. You can keep going. You won't die, but neither will you live. And the reason you can't live is because actually you've been created for more than that, because God has set eternity in your heart. But because the preacher in the book of Ecclesiastes is not a happy clappy, he always wants to bring you down and go, that's a burden, isn't it? That's a problem. I've seen the burden. Why is all this a burden? He says, people, he set eternity in the hearts of men, or people, but they cannot fathom what God's done from beginning to end. I find it very difficult to get the big picture. We can use all sorts of analogies, but it's almost like he's saying, I know there's a big tapestry here, but it's almost like I can't get back far enough to see what it really all means. It's like I can only see this one little bit, and I believe there's a big picture, but I can't see the big picture. All I can see is my little piece. So this is what he says. So how do you live when life feels like that? He says in verse 13, verse 12, I know there's nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their labor. This is the gift of God. Seems a strange thing to say, doesn't it? Seems a strange place to end. Is that it? Is that? What? Are you telling me that the thing you've got to do is eat and drink and find meaning in your work? That doesn't sound very spiritual. It doesn't sound as the sort of thing that you ought to be saying. But actually, in the context of what he's said so far, it's exactly the right thing to say. Because what he's struggling with is, how do you make sense of time? And I think what he's saying is, you need to accept that there's a big picture, accept that you can't always understand it. Accept the changes that happen to you in life. Accept the fact that there's some days where it feels like everything's promised and there's other days when everything feels like loss. Accept the fact that actually life's like that. But in the midst of all of that, you need to find the beauty and the moment of satisfaction and the moment that says yes. In the midst of all that feels so difficult, where's the beauty? Where's the satisfaction? Where's the moment that you go, yes? The reason he tells you this is not because eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow died. That's not what he says here. He says, Eat and drink and find satisfaction in your work, because this is the gift of God. This is what God wants for you. Now, it's easy, isn't it? It's easy with all of this stuff with life. Some of us want to say, the old days, let's just go back, and it was so much better than in the old days. And in chapter 7, he's going to say to you, don't say, why were the old days better than these? It's best. It's not wise to ask such questions. For those of you that are always looking back and going, today's difficult, but oh, it was so much better in those days gone by. And there's another group of people he talks about. And it's the people who are always looking forward. Verse 14, he says something that's actually in chapter 7 very sobering. He said, a man cannot discover anything about his future. It's kind of like, you can't live in the past. And actually, you can't live in the future. You can't, in this life of following Jesus, you must not become nostalgic. Now, it's easy to be nostalgic. It never rained in our childhood summers. Those of us who had children, our children never cried. Those of us who were working, our work was always meaningful. We always had enough money. We never went without. It's easy to get nostalgic. And even when we were without, oh, we were so happy. Holidays were better. Friendships were better. Work was better. It was so much better in the past. And the preacher says, that's no way to live. And then there's another group of you, and you go, tomorrow will be better. We can just get through today. Tomorrow's going to be better. Next year will be better. Next year, we'll be millionaires. That's no way to live. What the preacher says is, find the meaning today. Now, the New Testament takes this up, and they use two words when they talk about time, chronos and kairos. Chronos is where we get the word chronological from. It's what's the time? Well, actually, it's 25 to 12. What's the day? It's 26th of February. Thank you. What's the day? It's Sunday. That's chronos. But the bigger question, and the far more important question about time, is what moment are we living in right now? What's the kairos moment? What time is it right now? And too many of us live in chronos. We know what the date is, we know what the time is, we know what the month is, we know what the year is, but we don't know what the kairos is. What's this moment about? In Ephesians, Paul writes this, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every kairos opportunity, because the days are evil. What Paul does, he says, actually, make the most of every kairos moment. And to the Ephesians, he said, because the days are evil, this is difficult days. But actually, in the midst of difficulty, how do you make sense of it? You capture the kairos moment. How do you do this? I think it's an art and a skill. I don't think it comes naturally. I think it's about discernment. And at the risk of sounding really simplistic, I think it begins like this. But before the day begins for you, You offer the day back to God. There's a psalm that begins, "This is the day that the Lord has made. I will be glad in it." Those of us who are old enough remember the chorus, and we were led to believe he was talking about Sundays. And he wasn't. He was talking about this day that's come my way is the day that the Lord has given me. And I will be glad today. I'll turn my face. I will be glad. So the first thing, as you open your eyes, as you get your coffee, as you begin your day, Lord, this is the day you have given me. For some of you, you probably need to slow down a bit because you're going to have to notice what's going on. Sometimes the interesting things about days are not the things you planned to do, but the interruptions that came your way. Because it's the interruptions that become the kairos moment, the things you didn't plan, the things you didn't see, the conversations you didn't know you were going to have, the people you didn't know you were going to meet. What is this about today? It's about learning to listen to what God would want to say to you today. And then at the end of a day, reflecting on, well, what was that about? Where were the moments of joy? Where did I find satisfaction? Where were the moments where God was in that sense? Last slide. Jesus, when he's teaching disciples, he talks about how do you live day by day? And it's a passage you know really well. He begins his sort of like section of this teaching in these words. Therefore, don't be anxious about anything. Look at the birds of the air. Don't they have all that they need? Look at the plants in the field. Aren't they beautiful? Your Father knows what you need then, so don't be anxious about everything that you think you need. You can't make yourself taller by worrying. You can't get anything more by being anxious. Offer your day and your days to God, and this is the verse I want to hold on to. Seek first the kingdom. Because if you seek first the kingdom, all these things that you need are given to you. Matthew chapter 6. And then he has this sort of really strange little, almost throwaway line. Don't worry about tomorrow. Because tomorrow will look after itself. Today's the day. So we read literature that's 2,500 years old, 3,000 years old maybe, and we hear a preacher going around saying, don't miss today. Don't miss it. Don't miss the moment of beauty. Don't miss the moment of satisfaction. Don't miss the gift that God gives you today. And it's not all, you know, it's not this ethereal spirituality. It's about your work. It's about your eating. It's about your drinking. It's about actually the fact that in the very mundane stuff of life, it's the moment where you go, do you know what, God? I am so grateful. Because I suspect that one of the things that transforms lives are when we learn to see that the good things that we receive and even the ordinary things that we receive are given from the hand of God and we live as grateful people. And then there may be other moments. The kairos moment. The moment you're not expecting. The moment when for a moment God breaks in. There's a time, as he say, a time for everything. And there's a season for every activity under heaven. The Christian life is not just about one day after another. The Christian life is saying, actually, God, I'm yours, and I want to find you today. Well, please, Lord, will you help us?